Welcome to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Englander. Today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema, and we are a fractional new business team for marketing agencies and related marketing service companies. Even if you're not at the point of being able to hire a company like ours, I still want to do my best to help out. And today we are giving away access to our most recent recorded video training titled Relationship-Driven New Business at Scale, emphasis on at scale. This is all about how we secure 5 to 20 weekly brand agency relationships for each one of our clients using tasteful email outreach centered on personal and or business commonalities. A few things we cover. We cover the two big shifts that have created a huge need for this approach and why we think you should rethink the way your agency builds relationships and does new business. We cover the specifics on dozens of commonalities that we have used successfully to build relationships between agencies and brand side decision makers. We cover a simple follow-up process that you can use for your team, even if you're busy, even if you're in a mixed role between sales and client service. And we cover actual copy examples that you can use to get inspired and build your own campaigns. So if you'd like to get access to the video training, which runs about 30 minutes or so, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/relationships. Again, salesschema.com/relationships, plural. So today on the show, we have Brian Cush. Brian is co-founder of the Tidal Health Group, which has been in business for 10 years with the primary goal, according to their bio, of connecting healthcare brands with patients. They handle every touch point, both digital and physical, that a patient has with a brand from the moment they identify that healthcare brand to booking the appointment to after the transaction is completed. So this was a really fun and I think useful meat and potatoes episode of first talking about, you know, the healthcare industry and how it's changed with COVID and how that patient journey has evolved and everything that Tidal and Brian and his team are doing each and every day to kind of deal with that. But I think, you know, more useful to you, especially if you're leading an agency or you're in a new business position, is really kind of more of the same thing, but looked at in a different angle in terms of the value of specializing. And Brian talks about how much opportunity that's opened up by focusing on one area, which is actually a pretty big area, but even zooming in closer into that and into the healthcare industry. So I think that you're going to get a lot from Brian's journey and kind of what he's gone through to focus on healthcare, which is a number of idiosyncrasies, as you're soon to hear. So without further ado, please give it up for Brian Cush. Brian, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah, for sure. So I think at this point we've yet to really do, you know, a healthcare marketing episode, and I think it's just fascinating. I think the timing couldn't be better or worse to focus on a healthcare marketing episode. So there's so many places we could go with it. I guess like my first question is just what are you seeing these days? Like what's exciting you about where the realm is going? And let's start with that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, certainly been the world's been a roller coaster for everyone the last year. But I think healthcare in general has just kind of been topic everyone's talking about. And it was really interesting as an agency, really being at the heart in New York in March. I think the entire world kind of contracted. And we almost overnight had to become like a communications agency, where we were fundamentally digital marketing and even more specifically like patient acquisition. But at that point, no one knew anything and information was changing daily. So we basically all dropped what we were doing and just became communication specialists on behalf of our clients for the first 3 months. A year in now, I think things have turned around. We're not back to where things were pre-COVID from patient volumes, but we're at an interesting crossroad of now, how do you communicate to come back into the office and let people know that things are safe and really just get healthcare back to where it was?
Yeah, to dig into that a little bit. So, how would you describe the work pre-COVID versus now? Like, what's changed?
Yeah, I mean, pre-COVID, we have a different lens, I think, than most people in healthcare marketing. Or I think traditionally, people think of healthcare marketing a lot from like the life sciences, pharma, and even hospital side. And we're really born in the complete opposite. We started with like single doctor, hyper specialized surgeons. We've grown and now work with multiple kind of nationwide brands, but at the end of the day, they're still specialists. So like categorically, they're one board certification, but they're really two or three levels down. And it's our job to separate them from the crowd and help them kind of attract and acquire patients in the simplest sense. We really flipped that script on the head post-COVID and became just communication specialists. But at the end of the day, you're still trying to bring patients in that are just going through a complex journey online, trying to find a specialist.
Right. So kind of thinking about, you know, getting patients lined up with the right specialist, just to dig into that more, what is being, you know, more communications focused entail versus what you were doing before? Like what does the work kind of look like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. I mean, right out the gate was just really announcing and communicating like COVID policies. Like, were offices even open? How were they open? Like, is it now only by appointment? Like, what are the steps being taken? Like, we overnight had to send out our film crew and do a lot of like just videography and photography around COVID policy to send out communication notices. We had multiple team members kind of step into more content roles that were maybe blurring lines and doing a few things, but really just we had to get out information much faster and just constantly be producing information as processes and information change.
Yeah, makes sense. And just kind of getting out the right message and, you know, in the context of massive change. And I guess with that in mind, I know one thing you focus on a lot is patient search psychology. And can you talk about that a little bit? You know, kind of has that changed in the way people search for healthcare? Has that changed in the context of COVID? And if so, how? And just what's been your experience with that?
Yeah, I think it's massively changed. And the easiest way to think about it is there's so much still unknown information about the effects of COVID and what other kind of potential issues it can have. So we're literally seeing people Googling things historically that were like one particular condition or a disease state or a specialist, and then appending like end COVID or how does it affect COVID? So everybody is still unknown around a lot of things around respiratory and cardiology and really just neurological issues. So there's this like giant chunk of information that people want that aren't answered. So we're doing this like constant loop with our clients to at least give them an outlet to start to put their thoughts on it, because the science isn't even there yet across the board.
Right. And given that you guys are partnered with, you know, specialist healthcare providers and so on, how has that been affected by everything? Are people, you know, I would expect people are deferring lots of things they might have normally done, but what have you seen happen?
Yeah, being that we walk with a lot of private practices that I think just have to be even more business minded, just like based on the size of their business, is that volume's definitely down. When you think about like normal diagnostic things that are done yearly or biannually, or there was a general fear around that. So how do we communicate and let people know that it's safe to come back in, that these things that are preventative are still important? Or even things that are not preventative that you can come back into the office because of how steps and processes that are in place.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think, you know, you've had experience in other marketing roles in the past. So I'd love to just hear your experience on like, what are the big similarities, differences you see between marketing something like, you know, life-saving healthcare versus a cruise line or something like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing in my prior experience is like a little bit more transactional. I think the one thing that people, I think, overlook in healthcare is just how complex the journey is to search for a choice. I mean, I always make the joke is like, you're in like a department store and you're about to buy a t-shirt. And it's like, what do? You look up on your phone, you want to see if it's the best price. You want to see if there's other reviews about it. And that's just a few dollar t-shirt. So you think about someone that could be dealing with a chronic or a lifetime issue, like that complex journey online is really long. We track that and track about 15 different interactions that someone has with a brand before they reach out physically. So it is so non-transactional. I think that people don't realize the amount of touch points and information that people want online before making a healthcare choice.
Yeah. And I guess on the other side, is there anything that's surprised you? And I guess that's kind of a leading question, because I'm always thinking like, yeah, there's a lot more research that must go into like a healthcare purchase. But at the same time, sometimes I think people research the next car they're going to buy more than they might take care of themselves, right? So I'd love to hear, like, is there anything that, and maybe not along those lines, but is there anything that kind of jumps out at you as like, wow, I didn't think people thought this way in the context of searching for life-saving medicine?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny, the concept we really purport ourselves as is like building authority, and where we find people making decisions, thinking it's an authority source of information blows our mind. I think one of the biggest things is a hire that we made about 2 years ago is someone that specialized in patient acquisition from social media. And she really just disproved us. Like, we've been in the space about 10 years and social media has always been the smallest source of new patient volume. In the last few years, it's still small, but it's the fastest growing. But it's really like surprising the amount of people that go to social media channels to not only search and validate for information, and especially around healthcare.
Wow. I'd love to dig into that more. Like, what does that look like? Is that Facebook posts from friends and family? Is it just the news feed? Like, how does it end up playing out?
Yeah, I think it's both, depending on kind of how big of an organic channel you have, or if you're putting some kind of a paid budget. But yeah, I mean, that first, and there's a lot of software companies even within healthcare that just help validate that peer-to-peer review, so that if it's talking to a patient or talking to a loved one that went through it, and just getting that validation on social media, which makes sense in itself. You want to be hearing from someone that's going through or went through what you went through.
Right. And considering that was surprising, and you guys, it was some research that you came upon, you know, relatively recently. What was your assumption? What were you thinking people were doing to vet these things?
We always saw social media as more of like a validation channel, that it wouldn't be the first touch point and it wouldn't be the last touch point. It was more, and we never ignored social, but that it was a validation, where we would often see like the inbound channel would be like a pay-per-click ad or a well-written article that's found organically or some kind of more direct marketing. Social would be a validation step along the way, and then they would come back and convert usually on the website or through another touch point. But we're now seeing social as being the primary and first touch point, and then even the converting touch point.
Yeah, that's interesting. So people are literally like going into Facebook and searching in the bar, you know, whatever ailment, diabetes or something, and then seeing what comes up. Or is it like, how is it playing out?
Yeah, I think it's more on the demographic side. So that's like, for us, we categorically look at marketing platforms either with intent or demographics. So intent, we're going after like that diabetes search on like a search engine. Less people go into social channels to really look things up. It's more of like, how do we get the information in front of someone based on their demographic, or like using some kind of like, if it's a hashtag or something, they're like, how do you elevate information that they all ultimately then consume versus them actively searching like a term with a specific intent.
Right. Right. That makes sense. And then they're getting all the cues hit, you know, through the validation that comes from their friends and family kind of disseminating that too, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's just a generational thing that we can't avoid. I mean, it's like the adoption of telehealth, the adoption of live chat, just the younger generations want information quicker. They want answers quicker. And a lot of them have grown to where social media is just their channel or choice to interact on, where they're not using search engines in the traditional sense that we are. They use crowdsourced information on social media channels really almost as their search engine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And this might be going off the reservation a little bit from what you guys are focusing on, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on telehealth. And, you know, it seems like there's lots of advantages to it, and it also seems like there's lots of challenges. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on the incentives. Like, for example, I had a telehealth appointment and it was for something minor, and they ended up prescribing me an antibiotic. And then I went in and they were like, I don't know why they prescribed this to you. It's not necessary for the situation. And, you know, and then they said there's a big incentive for telehealth doctors to prescribe antibiotics because then they get better ratings on the review thing and then blah, blah, blah. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Like, what are the sort of good and bad incentives and the challenges and opportunities of telehealth in your experience?
Yeah, and I'll caveat. I mean, I can give 2 cents and opinion on that, but it's definitely a world far away from us. Like, we're not a software company. Our interaction with telehealth really is just from the communication standpoint, so that when if our clients have it, how do we show that service line? How do we communicate the experience to someone and how to get onto it? There's a lot underneath, even from like a policy and a regulation and a pricing standpoint, that you're seeing kind of ebb and flow, that the gates were just kind of opened with post-COVID world, that it was interesting from an adoption standpoint, that it was kind of across the board for us, that agnostic of specialty down to like head and neck cancer clients, people were adopting telehealth as at least their first mode of interaction. It obviously can't replace the entire interaction when you're doing something like a treatment like that, but really across the board, we saw adoption. And then now you're seeing kind of the retraction of that, that commercial payers are not covering telehealth. So then you're trying to understand where is its place in the community, because like you're saying, it certainly is an area that can have problems, that it's not going to just replace what was there before.
Yeah, I guess one thing that comes to mind, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, is it seems like the rise of telehealth definitely puts a higher premium on marketers, right? Because it becomes something that's way more measurable than an inpatient. I think it gets less messy than having to get somebody into an office and all these sort of things. And it seems like another thing that's easier to track. But I'd love to hear what you think of that.
Yeah, I mean, the great things about telehealth, especially when you think it extends to the community more, so it gives access to healthcare. But then underneath that, is it the proper healthcare? Is it limiting any types of diagnosis? That's really what like the more software and technologists of the world are trying to answer and make sure that it should lower the barrier of entry to get healthcare, and it should hopefully reduce the cost of that first interaction. But is it like in your sense, and the anecdotal example you brought, like, is it then causing more interactions? Is it something that ultimately wasn't the right or proper first interaction?
Yeah, let's see where it goes. And to shift gears a little bit, I'd love to hear, just kind of focus on building the agency and so on. I think one thing that creates a lot of anxiety for the agencies we interact with is where to focus, you know, whether it's niching or specializing, however you want to put it, you know, what does it take to actually put up your shingle and say, we only work with this industry. So I'd love to learn a little bit about your journey and kind of how you guys came to focus on healthcare versus all the other areas out there.
Yeah, no, it's funny. We definitely are of the camp of specialize and specialize further. I think really early, I mean, we opened our doors as a, at least in the specialist sense of what we call like professional services marketing. So we didn't do anything like e-commerce related. So we were working with like architects, CPAs, doctors, lawyers, that we wanted to have something that was a little bit more of a complex search journey. Like, we weren't going to be a technology company. There's way too crowded of a field, I think, in the e-commerce world. But really quickly, we found a connection of understanding really the information, whether it's billing or really just the language and coding around healthcare, thinking about CPT and ICD-9 codes, and how we can actually craft that and use that data in our marketing and our messaging. Kind of when we connected those two worlds, it really made sense and it worked. So for us, it was really just, it's like the opportunity arose. So why wouldn't we specialize when we could see that something was working and working well? Very early, a few months into our existence, we said we're going to become healthcare specialists, and have rode that since the last eight plus years.
Yeah. And to play devil's advocate, I mean, aren't you guys giving up tons of business? You know, are you ever, how often are you like regretting it when another opportunity comes along and a professional services area you could serve? Like, how have you thought about it X years in?
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you, like, my Jekyll and Hyde brain has changed a lot over the 10 years of just being an entrepreneur. That early on, yeah, there's that headspace of when you just really are in that scrappy mode of bringing in any clientele. So it's hard to go, well, why would I turn away revenue at a moment when that's all that really matters is getting growth? But I will say, when we started, I mean, at that point, it was just me. Really quickly, you realize by specializing, there's a kind of a power in saying no as well, that allowed conversations to open up much faster or close faster. That can also just be as helpful. And we've never really looked back. It hasn't been an issue being a specialist that now at this point, we really don't turn away work because we're known for what we do.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I guess with us specializing on the agency world, it's sort of inspired, you know, solving other problems down the value chain. You know, we're kind of focused on the new business front. So it started out with lead gen, and now it's involving, you know, potentially learning and modules for how to like get better sales outcomes and all that stuff. So I'd love to hear your experience with that. By specializing, have you gone further down the value chain and kind of developed other programs, or kind of how have you thought about continuing to serve that market?
Yeah, I think we followed a very similar path where we started out really as I self-taught myself web design and then like PPC. And we're just really in these acute interactions of just like patient acquisition. And then really started to identify what that talking point that we started with, that patient journey was complex, where just kind of going straight ad to website, how to like, it was yielding a value, but we noticed, okay, well, we also need content. We also need videography, also need social. We also need developers, and just kept backfilling that service to the point where now we're a full service agency in healthcare and can kind of really support what we call any digital interaction with a potential patient.
Right. And then healthcare, you know, we talk about niching and specializing, but healthcare is such a huge umbrella that there's still so much to be done there. So have you been pushed to niche even more? Any other healthcare organizations that you are or aren't a fit for? Like how have you gone about figuring out how to define that at this point?
Yeah. I mean, we first kind of niched ourselves underneath healthcare, really just on like the size of the business, where it made sense to work with an agency our side when you were like a hyper specialist or one or two locations. And just they didn't have the capacity to either hire internally or just the experience to kind of know that they needed this. So we functioned as this kind of outsourced marketing department for these smaller brands. We've then since grown with a lot of those existing clients, or just grown as a company that we can now kind of level up to that next kind of more multi-specialty, multi-state client. And now we're kind of knocking on the door of that next level, now doing a lot of consulting work for like hospital departments or hospitals at large that have a marketing department, but they're not as specialized as us. So we kind of extend our experience to them from a consulting standpoint.
Right. That makes sense. And with that in mind, assuming you are selling to doctors or you have been in the past, what's it like selling to doctors? How do you make that work?
it's an interesting beast. There's a dual mindset that if we know we're talking to and selling to an acting doctor that's also the business of the practice is very different than if we're interfacing with a brand that is big enough that has someone administratively looking over the business of the practice. So when we're selling to a doctor, our interactions are like really acute and quick. And once we kind of cross that trust hurdle, it almost becomes minimal that they just trust us at that point. Like their time is so valuable because the minutes they're not working, the brand's not making money for them. And that's a hard spot for a doctor to be in when they're running the business and generating the revenue. So we then have the other side of our clients where we'll often interface with like a CFO or a COO or a business lead. That's a very different conversation.
Right. I can imagine. And, I think that selling to most of the business world, you're using words like revenue and targets, and we're going to increase this, we're going to increase that. Does that change in the healthcare world? Do you have to soften all that language to make it, you know, more based around patient outcomes and doing well? Like it sounds like you moved into healthcare from other industries. So were there like interesting learning curves for the linguistics, I guess?
Yeah, no, it definitely was softened. My previous life was in like project management in the finance world. So we're starting to crush back into that headspace when we're dealing with more like the COOs of the world. But yeah, when you're talking to the doctor, it's really just plain and simple for them is kind of like new patient volume, tracking that growth in like a very macro and simple sense where underneath it, they just don't have the headspace and they're not trained to really have like kind of a financing background to like peel apart on these really granular like ROI levels.
Yeah, that makes sense. And to dig into new business more, I love to hear, you know, what's worked, what hasn't worked for you guys. For context, you know, we do a lot of outbound targeted outreach for our clients, and that can work really well. What we're doing right now, you know, if you get meta thought leadership is big. What's been effective and ineffective on the other hand, for you guys kind of to reach doctors at this point?
Yeah, I think we're cresting that kind of thought leadership outbound world now. To start, it really was all referral. Like, we started in Manhattan with these kind of hyper-specialized groups. And then really early, I just recognized the professional services around them. So think like medical billing companies, medical law firms, CPAs that specialize in healthcare, just fostered those relationships. And it was our initial few years of growth was all referral. It was just like doing right by the client, doing right by the partner when you start with their client. But then that obviously has a limitation. There's no exponential growth really with that, just that world. So we've established enough of a brand, and to the point that our brand is starting to inbound. And myself particularly has shifted to a role much more on just like brand awareness and strategic partnerships, that we have two really good strategic partnerships from a healthcare technology standpoint, that working in partnership with them has brought in work. And then really now our brand and kind of our leadership is starting to bring us work.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that, to myself in the shoes of a lot of our listeners, I think that a lot of people we talk to and work with, you know, are going after strategic partnerships. Is there anything that you found to be useful? I mean, I think that a lot of people kind of get on calls with third parties and they have nice conversations, and a few go places, others don't. And then other people are just, you know, kind of tossing out commission arrangements right off the bat. Is there a way to approach this that you found to work really well for kind of building these relationships and nurturing them and so on?
Yeah. The way I look at it, to me, is long-term problem solving. Like I do not lead with and don't throw out commission rates or anything like that. Our strategic partnerships are very much in a sense is that we've identified something in our industry or our clients' needs that either we can't support, or that someone has done so much better than us that it wouldn't make sense for us to try and compete. So then we go out to the market, literally just bulk negotiate a better preferred rate for all of our clients and structure it as a long-term partnership. And I mean, some of our client, these strategic partnerships are now in the sixth or seventh year that the relationship is organically and fruitfully yielded us. And it's not something that we generate revenue from that relationship, but it has brought a lot of business, just making it very outward and public that we work with best in class.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And it seems like, have you found, you know, any interesting ways of structuring those things? Because I guess sometimes I think, you know, there's people that are in our world or in our clients' world that might need an e-commerce agency or the deal with e-commerce or whatever it might be. But it's sometimes tough to make things a two-way street, right? Like, we do a lot of new business consulting, but the operational side, we only get a little peek into sometimes. So sometimes it's tough for us to be able to make the volume of intros to a strategic partner that might be able to make intros for us to help out, you know, on the new business side. So are there any interesting ways for kind of like structuring those agreements or for like thinking of these things to make them work?
Yeah, again, the way we look at it was more like we knew what the kind of street pricing was for a particular product. Mm-hmm. We knew that they were the best in class, and then approached that company and said, well, we want a long-term relationship. What's kind of the best you can do in giving us a bulk price? And extended that to our clients, where we never looked at it. And it's almost like a mindset. We never went into it going like, how much revenue can you share with us? Or what's that? To me, that was such a micro short-term mindset that was not going to make or break our company. I'm trying to look as far into the future as I can, that positioning with this company will yield better results than the micro like few dollars that we'd get from a referral standpoint. And I mean, it's one of our clients. I mean, it's public on our site, was acquired by Prescani, which is a like 800-pound gorilla in our industry, that we're now a partner underneath because we are a partner of the firm that they acquired. So we're now getting access to even better pricing, more products, and just a relationship with even a larger entity.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I imagine, you know, thinking of those sorts of things and thinking long-term and being creative to kind of structure these things the right way takes a good amount of time and energy. And what we see in the agency world is so many owners and executives get caught up in the weeds, whether it's with sales or with putting out fires and that sort of thing. So I'd love to just kind of hear how you've approached that. Like, how do you divide up your day? How do you reserve enough time to think about the longer term stuff and so on?
Yeah. And that, again, has been iterative over the years. And that's the biggest thing when I look at or talk to entrepreneurs is really like, don't be afraid to kind of be objective on yourself and prioritizing your time based on where the business's needs are. Like, I remember being fully in there, being the one that's executing and selling, and you kind of had to carve those needles on, okay, what percentage of my day needs to happen that would then yield the work, and then how much time do I need to deliver the work? And that's now crested fully where my business partner is COO, runs the operations and manages the team, and my day is now fully on sales partnerships. And that just organically come that way. And really only been the last, let's say, year or so of going that into that direction. And that's just something you have to not be afraid to really push on yourself and figure out what is the best use of your time at this moment.
Right, right. That makes sense. And it sounds like, so you're the one in the sales seat now, and I'd love to hear kind of your longer term thoughts on that. You know, do you envision hiring a salesperson to replace you, or how are you kind of thinking about it? I think that'll be really useful to compare notes with our listeners, or vice versa, for them to compare notes with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Our pathway right now is funny. In our recent hire, actually a few weeks ago, was an account manager that had a little bit of a sales background. And we'll see. I mean, this is one of those things that you won't know what the future is, but the goal potentially would be that they would morph into more of a sales role, so that the brand itself is now generating leads that is not contingent on the individual of me, so that that person can then hand over and take those sales conversations, and I can shift more into the really macro, like strategic partnership and being kind of the thought leader of our brand and our industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that in mind, where do you see it going in terms of the markets you're focusing on? Do you think it's going to continue to be specialty shops, or do you see a world in which the niche expands out to other areas of healthcare?
We see it as a niche expands out. I mean, we're actually right in the middle of kind of a 2.0 rebranding of ourselves, of leading with this concept of authority. It's a very kind of like healthcare driven acronym, but a couple of like the search engine algorithm updates had this acronym of EAT. If you or your listeners don't know, it stands for expertise, authority, and trust. Search engines basically came out and said, if your website talks about anything finance or healthcare related, we're going to hold it to a higher bar. Basically, we're like, we're going to hold your website to a higher bar to prove that whoever's behind the website and the content is of authority to be speaking about it. What that means in our world in healthcare is obviously someone that's credentialed as MD or whatever particular kind of right license that should be speaking on a topic should be the one and the voice behind it. And we've been furthering like literal product development around that. We do a lot of consulting and audits to larger healthcare brands and like adjacent healthcare brands and different verticals. It's like life sciences or DME worlds or hospitals. So we're just furthering hamming down as being known as the authority on authority.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. My guess is a lot of our listeners that maybe have dabbled in healthcare may or may not have known that. So it sounds like it's as it should be when it comes to people's financial and physical health. It's kind of go big or go home.
Yeah. The other acronym I think is YMYL. They call it your money, your life, basically. So if your website can have an effect on someone's money or their health, it's held to a higher standard. And it's a really like, this is a very hot button concept right now when you think about everything going on with Congress of misinformation around COVID vaccines, that social media platforms of the world, the search engine of the world are really fighting to understand, and how do we elevate and give voice to the proper authorities? And that's a struggle on a global sense, let alone down to a single practice sense that's trying to be a specialist. So this is not something that's going to go away in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like it's just kind of a recurring theme on our show that I think probably a lot of people are getting sick of hearing. There's just so much more opportunity that opens with specialization than without it, than the risk that goes without it. So I think it's probably another good example of that. So, so Brian, kind of getting towards the end of the time, I'd love to hear just what are you up to these days? You know, any big projects, any interesting things you're focusing on beyond what we've talked about?
Yeah, I think we're kind of knee deep in that rebranding of us. We actually pulled out three things that we used to do in the past that were more categorically service labeled and actually productized them. One in particular is this, it's called Authority Insight, which is really our objective take at trying to create a formula to output someone's authority. We like a grading scale that literally we do, and we've now done kind of successfully a few times of making a process on what are the factors to get your authority to a higher ranking.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole I'd like to go down is the productized service thing. So have you guys built a productized service before, and how would you define a productized service, and what have you learned from that? So I think that's kind of a hot button issue.
Yeah, no, we haven't. And it's been an interesting dance. And like, as we've grown, obviously there's a more like a linear correlation. When you're a service team, it's hard to kind of continually grow without also continually hiring, increasing your overhead. So we tried to look at aspects of us that could we productize it and then use it as a lead generation into our service team. And this was a no-brainer that we were doing these audits very manually. And underneath the audit, we're calling it more like tech enabled. There's certain aspects of the audit that are automated through a product, but there's definitely still a lot of it that's manual. So it's not fully like just a plug and play product, but it's moving us in that direction. And then it's also a lead generation source into our service team, because not only do we feel we know the formula around making someone an objective authority, we can then execute on the work for it as well.
Right. So it's almost like it was kind of part of the process, and people were interested in it in a way that was maybe a little more detached from the whole thing. So it seems like it was kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. And it's a soft introduction to us when someone doesn't know us, or most of our referrals came from existing clients or someone that knew our work. So that trust barrier was kind of crossed very quickly. Now that our brand is getting out there and someone inbounds us, they don't have that background or experience. So this product is kind of a softer introduction. Especially when I think about larger healthcare brands or hospitals, they're not just going to outsource all their work overnight. So this is kind of like a baby step into our relationship to understand how we look at the industry and provide a service and a product back to them.
Yeah. And just to, maybe I should have asked earlier, but dig into it a little bit more. What does the product look like? Like what's the deliverable in a nutshell?
Yeah. It's basically two documents. There's one generally that's like really in depth. That's like almost read like a developer. It's kind of like we've done this audit. It falls into three categories where we give a grade to your on-site authority. So like your primary website, we give a grade to your off-site authority. So that could be physical or digital, but not on any properties you own. And then we give a grade on any kind of advertising that you're doing. So you literally have a snapshot of where we put your grade between those three categories. And there's like a technical document that shows kind of where we've based all our findings or what tools we've used to do that. And then there's like a softer document that's kind of like the presentation when we're not talking to a technical team on, hey, here are the recommendations. This is how we would explain this to someone that isn't technical and how to kind of implement and the pathways forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And it's funny how like, as you specialize, it almost feels like the agency becomes more of a consultancy and you're kind of dealing with higher level problems within a business and everything. So, and it sounds like a great lead generation tool as well. So it makes a lot of sense. Awesome. So with that, Brian, how can people get in touch with you and kind of follow what you're up to?
Yeah. Personally, I'm on LinkedIn the most. I think I try and be active in the community and then produce a lot of content. Or as a company, you can always reach out to us on our website. We offer free consultations around that concept of authority. Those are probably the two best channels.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate your time.
You too. Thanks, Dan. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. Again, today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema. We are a fractional new business team for growth-focused boutique agencies and related marketing service companies. But even if you're not at the point of hiring us yet, I still really want to do you a solid by giving you access for free, by the way, to our latest recorded video training. And that is titled Relationship Driven New Business at Scale, emphasis on at scale. And basically, this is how we secure around 5 to 20 weekly brand agency relationships for each one of our clients using tasteful email outreach centered on personal and or business commonalities that our clients share with the people they're reaching out to. So a few things that we cover the two big shifts that have informed this big strategy shift and why we think you should rethink the way that you are doing new business, most likely at your agency. We talk about dozens of specific commonalities that we use to build relationships between our clients and brand side decision makers. We go over a simple, manageable follow-up process that you or your team can use, even if you're busy, even if you're in a mixed sales client service role. And we actually go over specific copy examples that you can use to get inspired and build your own campaigns. So if you'd like to get access to this roughly 30-minute video training, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/relationships. Again, that's salesschema.com/relationships, plural. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Digital Agency Growth Podcast.